tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan.
We have a very special show this week. We've done this before, but we don't do this very often. We have a co-host, and she's actually going to moderate most of the show. So I'm going to introduce my co-host this week, and then I will let her introduce our guest and the topic of the show. So my co-host is somebody who Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, the listeners, are probably familiar with. Anita Stewart's been on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox several times. And she has her own show on Wise Women Media. And she calls herself the creatrix and the host and the executive producer of her podcast. And she's an environmental activist, independent political activist, and just a great woman to have here, especially for this show. And as soon as our guest reached out to me, I thought I'm gonna bring Anita Stewart in on this. So Anita Stewart, thank you for doing this, and welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And take it away. Introduce our guest and the topic of the show, and I'll just be here to listen unless I have a follow-up question or something that pops up to me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I so appreciate it. And let me go ahead and just very quickly introduce our guest, Mary Lou Singleton. She's a radical feminist mother, midwife, and nurse practitioner who has dedicated her life to women's liberation. She's served on the board of directors of Midwives Alliance of North America and the National Association of Certified Professional Midwives. She currently sits on the advisory board of the Stop Patriarchy Abortion Rights Freedom Ride and is the chair of the Reproductive Sovereignty Task Force for the Women's Liberation Front. So we're going to be talking about the conference that's coming up, the Midwives Alliance of North America, the statement that they have recently put out, definitely rewriting language and X-ing out the woman and the mother out of language. So this is very much a women's rights program, and there's been a lot of pushback with this lately because just recently this has also happened with a trans support statement that went up on the Veterans for Peace website. So we're having some real issues with activists on the left and how they define gender and women's rights in general. So Mary Lou, why don't you start us out with telling us a little bit about MANA, Midwives Alliance of North America, and in 2014 how they changed and rewrote this language.
Sure. The Midwives Alliance of North America is the national organization representing all midwives, but primarily representing the home birth midwives, the midwives who are not working in the corporate healthcare system. It's a really important organization. It has been a part of the women's liberation movement since its inception. And last year, they gave in to the demands of the pro-gender people who were asking them to change all of their language in their core competency document to effectively erase the words mother and woman from the document. And this is a core competency document for midwives. This is what this professional organization is saying represents what every safe entry-level midwife should know about birth and babies. So to many of us, it was very concerning to have this language change that is now telling us that we as midwives should view birth, this biological process, this as woman-centered as you can get process, through the lens of gender identity, not through the lens of biology.
Wow. And were these members of MANA, or were these outside people that were influencing some of the higher ups in MANA to change the language? How did that occur?
Mana hired an inclusivity consultant. Her name is Indra Lucero. She has also worked for the Palms Institute, which is funded by a very, very wealthy trans woman, Jennifer Pritzker, whose birth name is James Pritzker, a male to trans person from one of the wealthiest families in America, has poured billions of dollars into advancing the rights of male to trans people in the military. So Indra comes from that, like funded by billionaires, military background, and was hired by Mana to be their inclusivity consultant, and she was very influential in drafting the language changes.
So this was actually somebody that was consulting for Mana, so it wasn't the trans community at large that were pushing for these changes in language. Well, this was just a few people.
Yeah, it was a few people. I think that there were, 10 years ago, there were people coming from the trans community asking Mana to change the language. And the midwife was like, no, you know, women give birth. This is how it works, and, you know, that we're not going to change it. But last year, this movement is very well funded, you know, and also gaining a lot of momentum. And last year, Mana did give into the changes and hired someone to actually rewrite the language. And now the core competency document refers to pregnant individuals and birthing parents. And the words woman and mother are not in the document anymore.
Mary Lou, some of the listeners might not understand why this change in language is so dangerous, especially for, you know, the generations that are coming up. Explain why this is dangerous, that it's just not something that we as women should agree with. Even women that are in the peace community and activist community, and, you know, some of us have stood next to the trans community when we've been fighting for human rights and social justice. I mean, we're not at a war here. We're supposed to be united. But why is this dangerous?
Well, genderism is being pushed on us very hard, and there's a societal move toward defining male and female through the lens of gender theory. As you know, gender is basically synonymous with sex role stereotypes. It means what a culture says. Female, what is femininity, what is masculinity? Masculinity always being the dominant traits that are really valued, especially the monetarily valued traits, and femininity always being the subordinate traits. Radical feminists like myself are gender abolitionists. We don't believe that beyond biology, we don't believe that people should have limitations of what girls can do, what boys can do. We have a fundamental disagreement about the word woman. I believe, and many midwives believe this, whether or not they label themselves radical feminists, many women believe this, that woman is an adult human female. It's a biological designation in a sexually dimorphic species. Female meaning the members of that species who produce ovum and give birth to live young. The genderist belief, a woman is anyone who feels like a woman, anyone who identifies as a woman. It's a tautological definition. Why this is dangerous for women and for female people is because it robs us of our ability to discuss sex-based oppression. And there is a global system of male supremacy that oppresses female people on the basis of biological sex. that has nothing to do with gender identity. In midwifery, though, you know, forced cesareans, women going to jail for miscarriages. We have women in jail for miscarrying in this country. Fetal personhood laws, forced episiotomies, you know, and globally child marriage, you know, with quotation marks around marriage. All of these things are sex-based oppression. They exist because of the oppression of females by males, and that oppression is based on our biological capacity to reproduce. Genderism robs us from our ability to describe that oppression, and if we can't describe it and name it, we can't fight it.
So I think that it's important to say that 53% of the population on the planet, which is female, biologically female, we are the oppressed class. And so many people do not believe that, both male and female, but we are the oppressed class. And is that what a radical feminist is? Can you define a radical feminist?
That is what a radical feminist is. A radical feminist is someone who believes there is a that males as a class, we're not talking about individuals, but as a class, are oppressing females as a class, and that this system of oppression is called patriarchy or male supremacy, and that it's global in scope. So yes, a radical feminist is someone who believes feminism and the women's liberation movement is about the destruction of male supremacy and the liberation of women from patriarchal oppression. Now we have this neoliberal feminism TM that is, you know, feminism is all about choices. That's what I keep hearing. Feminism is all about choices. But no, that's not true. Like, you know, any more than environmentalism is all about choices. Like, no, it's, like feminism means something.
Right.
It means something.
Exactly. And then we have these different terms. This is such a topic. This topic matter is just so multi-layered, and there's so many terms, and if you can't get past the terms, you can't really understand it. When it comes to feminists, there's also like the second wave feminists and the third wave feminists. Can you kind of break that down briefly for us?
Well, the second wave feminists were the feminists who fought after the right to vote and basic property rights had been established by what get labeled the first wave feminists. I don't really like this wave system because I believe female human beings have resisted their oppression since the beginning of the patriarchy, and I don't think it just came in three waves, you know? And I think this is another way to divide us. But when people are looking at it that way, the first wave people are the suffragettes, the people trying to secure property, education rights for women. The second wave feminists were focused on really calling out patriarchy, male supremacy, and working toward the liberation of women for that, focusing on abortion rights, on you know, Andrea Dworkin talking about, you know, pornography as the propaganda of the patriarchy, working to create rape shelters, women's domestic violence shelters, ending the legality of marital rape, these kind of things. So these were women really fighting for our liberation. I believe what gets called third wave feminism is actually backlash to feminism, and it comes from more of this, what we've experienced as a culture, this neoliberal, starting with Reagan, Thatcher, really going on steroids during the Clinton administration of it's all about the individual, there's no such thing as a society, everybody can make their individual choices, who are you to critique someone's choices, where radical feminists who fall more in the second wave think, well, in this brutal system of male supremacy, women have crappy choices.
Right. And we can start, you know, with the ERA, which has never been made law in this country, and we can also start with just one simple thing, the disparity in wages that women make in comparison to men, and usually more often than not, the women are the ones raising the families now, and the men have already taken off. So the women really have the brunt of everything, and we're living, you know, just above the poverty line in most cases. And it's already been proven that the males, when they leave and when they divorce, they have a higher standard of living once they've gone through the divorce. So they're living high on the hog, and the women and children, again, are suffering, so and doing without. So with this change of language and basically changing around what feminism really means, and I consider myself a radical feminist, but I'm kind of new to this, not understanding it before and really studying the topic now. Tell us what is happening now with the Women's Liberation Front and the conference that's upcoming this weekend. Tell us a little bit about that and why you will actually be there but not be there.
I'm going to backtrack a tiny bit that after the Midwives Alliance of North America changed their core competencies, I and a group of other women drafted an open letter to MANA asking them to reconsider this language change and explaining why we felt it was problematic. Our letter was signed by many midwives. Many, many more midwives said they wanted to sign it but were afraid because this is such a toxic issue politically. So this open letter came out, and around the time that the open letter came out, I applied for a table for Wolf at the MANA conference, because the MANA conference is in my hometown this year in Albuquerque, and I'm very passionate about spreading the word of women's liberation and felt like it was a perfect place to go and have a presence for Wolf there. I received a call from the vice president of MANA saying they had grave concerns about our presence there, and the Vice President Sarita Bennett kept referencing that letter you wrote, and she said that because the Women's Liberation Front promotes gender abolition, we make people feel unsafe, and we can't have a table at the exhibit hall. So in the time-honored tradition of banned radical groups, we're going to do a shadow conference, and we have a suite in the hotel. We will have refreshments and literature, and we have lots of wonderful radical feminists who will be there to talk to people. We have great swag. I made a bunch of great stickers, and we have T-shirts. We have all kinds of wonderful stuff, and we're going to be talking about reclaiming abortion rights, confronting the gender industrial complex. We'll be talking about the widespread marketing of women's bodies in the global, the increasing trade in our eggs, wombs, and breast milk. We're really going to be talking about some very real issues that are about the patriarchy and how it affects women.
There's so many topics that women really need to hear about that I don't think they're aware of. So maybe since we can seg right into it, tell us a little bit about big pharma, big medicine, and big mental health industries, and as you've used the term, the gender industrial complex. Tell us a little bit about the monies made and how they're made and how all of this is marketed.
Right. So what I'm witnessing, and I think if we all step back, we're all witnessing it, is the marketing and medicalization of gender, and it's being sold to, particularly to young people. And there is so much money to be made in making people hate their bodies. And women know that. On a visceral level, we know that. We're trained from a very young age to hate our bodies, so we have to purchase all these things to try to make ourselves more lovable. And now there's a really huge, huge corporate push to market gender dysphoria and medicalize it. The World Health Organization and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the psychiatrists have all medicalized gender within the last few years. And to treat this as something that needs to be corrected with very expensive alterations to the body and a lifelong dependence on hormones. Hormones are incredibly expensive. They're really, really expensive drugs. There's no question that this is being marketed. It's like you can't pick up a newspaper and not see some puff piece about transgender right now, where, and even in the mainstream media, like there's, you know, it's everywhere on television. You don't have to look far to find this glamorization of being transgender, but but you'll never see a picture of like a woman without makeup on or a woman with hairy legs or facial hair.
Right.
Yeah, like there's nothing subversive about this. It's being marketed to children. And what I am especially concerned about is the way it's being marketed to parents with gender nonconforming kids who probably would have, you know, 20 years ago grown up to be happy, functional gay adults. And now these kids are getting pathologized, they're getting mind warped and told you actually are in the wrong body. What does that do to a child to be told you're in, like, how can you be in the wrong body? Like, you get the body you get, you know, and telling that to a child and confirming that to a child and then putting that child on hormone blockers before puberty to stop puberty from happening, then giving the child cross-sex hormones and then medically sterilizing the child so they're dependent on hormones for the rest of their life. It's very distressing.
So we're talking about the potential of $1 million to $1 billion industry in just accomplishing this type of marketing. Just here in the United States alone, we're not even talking about the rest of the world.
Absolutely. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's just mind-blowing. It's mind-boggling. I mean...
Right. It is absolutely mind-boggling. And, you know, people really want to, like, step back and realize this is not good. This is not about human liberation. The inherent homophobia under this, the number of gay children and young adults who are being transitioned into heteronormativity, essentially, is what's happening. And we can look at Iran, the country of Iran, where you will be jailed or killed for being openly gay, but the country will pay for your sex change surgery so you can live as the opposite gender, because transgenderism supports the caste system of, you know, supports male supremacy. It doesn't upset the gender caste system at all. But being authentically gay, like being in a gay relationship, you know, it's like everybody does the dishes sometimes, you know, everybody's taking care of the kids. It really disrupts that.
Yeah, I wasn't even aware of that about Iran. That is just, that too is mind-blowing. So what do you think about the images that were being said? I mean, you mentioned it, you know, like in print media, but also on television and everywhere. I watched the Global Citizen concert, I think it was last weekend, and they were talking about how Beyonce was a feminist, and they were given a bunch of hype before she got on the stage. And I can't remember the actor's name, but it's the trans person that's the actor for Orange is the New Black.
Laverne Cox, yeah.
Yes, and she got up to speak, and she said, you know, while we're, you know, talking about Beyonce coming on the stage and being a feminist and all the feminist work that she's done, we want to also make sure that everybody knows that the rights of trans people are included also as feminists. And she made this, you know, she made this right on the stage, right in front of the live crowd, on the internet, on television. And I was kind of shocked because it was fed into the program. Mm-hmm. And then Beyonce came on, and basically her presentation to me just looked like, you know, she had been commodified. She became a sexual object.
Right.
Her music may be great, but she's a sexual object. So it's like we're being fed this whether we want to be fed this or not.
And it's a huge propaganda machine that is feeding this to people, and so many people, like, we've lost all ability to think critically, and there's people are so afraid of offending anyone, and the way this has been tacked on to the gay rights movement as though it's all the same struggle is confusing a lot of people. But I think everyone needs to step back and think, what does this mean for women as a class? What does this mean for women as a class that there's no definable metric whenever your definition of a woman is someone who identifies as a woman. So what this means is we change laws that say gender identity is real, biological sex isn't, women's bathrooms are open to anyone who identifies as a woman. Women's locker rooms are open to anyone who identifies as a woman. Women's sports teams, rape crisis centers. If you request a female care provider in a medical institution, it could be a trans woman. Over 60% of trans women, of male to trans people, keep their penises intact and have no intention of not having a penis. Women are being told we have to call these female penises. The mind-bending of women and the loss of women's sex-based protections that we have fought so hard for is what concerns me. It's like such a coup on the part of the male supremacists, you know? It's a real coup on their part, and it's going to take a big fight to wake people up to it.
I have a friend who's a nurse who was on the floor, and she was sent up a patient from ER, so she went in to do the assessment, and it wasn't until, you know, she had the patient unclothed, and of course the patient was in bed A, and there was a 90-year-old woman in bed B, and here is this 90-year-old woman in bed B and her family, who probably had no idea that bed A was, a male to female trans person in the bed. And what, you know, this means that there are literally no safe spaces for women.
Right.
That some of these men, male to trans people, could be predators.
Right. And there
might be still predators.
Right. Right. And the times that they are, like, they're, the way the laws are being written there, we have to honor gender identity as the definition of male and female. States that have passed these, like, so when a man who identifies as a woman rapes a woman with his penis, it gets listed as a lesbian rape. It gets listed as a woman raping another woman. And this has already happened. There's a very wealthy Twitter executive, Dana McCollum, who identifies as a woman but is a male person in a male body, was married to a woman and a female, actual biological, a woman by my definition of a woman, an adult human female. She was trying to divorce him. He kidnapped her. He repeatedly raped her. He took a plea, basically admitting guilt, and it was listed in the California police ledger in the crime logs as a lesbian rape. This is also happening right now in Virginia, where the head of a transgender resource center was sexually abusing multiple children coming through there. This is a man who identifies as a woman who's been sexually abusing children, and it got listed as local woman abuses children. We're losing our ability to name male violence. We're losing our ability to keep statistics on male violence. And, you know, this is, the men's rights movement is always saying, well, women rape too and women abuse too. And, you know, this is certainly going to be true now that more women are actually men.
Right. And I don't think it even comes close as far as percentages on which, those born male and those born female, on who commits the most violence. I don't think there's any question there that the males do.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially rape.
And it's already happened. There are so many cases of male to trans people being sexual perpetrators, and no one will discuss this of how, like, we get accused of being transphobic. I'm not transphobic. I am manphobic. You know, like every woman in a rape culture, I get it that, you know, rape is a constant threat to me. It might come in the form of a pizza delivery guy. It might happen in the parking lot. Like, all of us are on the alert about rape all the time because we don't know which men are rapists. And the studies show us that male to trans people have exactly the same rate of violence as any group of males. So we have a right to not want them in our sex segregated spaces for the same reason we don't want any males in there.
And women that have already experienced violence or rape and come to these spaces expecting them to be safe spaces for women, and then finding, you know, members of the trans community in those, what they called safe spaces, I mean, what does that do to them? I mean, I'm thinking of women that are in the military and they, you know, they've experienced just, you know, just one group specifically, women that have, you know, gone through rape and, you know, male violence. And then they come and maybe join a group to discuss those issues, and they have to sit there with the oppressors. So we're the class, the majority of the population on the planet, and we're the victimized, and we're in these safe spaces with our oppressor.
Absolutely. And if I acknowledge that trans people suffer from male violence too, it's not radical feminists attacking and killing trans people, it's men. The problem is male violence. If the men's bathrooms aren't safe, let's fix that. Don't make our bathrooms even less safe.
Right. Exactly.
Hi, Anita, this is Cindy. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay, this has been a wonderful conversation, ladies. We are running out of time. I can't believe it. But Mary Lou, I was speaking right before our interview with Sansara Taylor. And, you're on the board of her Stop Patriarchy, or of the Stop Patriarchy. I don't know if it's hers, but I know she's one of the founders.
I'll give her credit for it. She's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, she's really awesome. And we were speaking a little, I told her that I was getting ready to interview you, and, you know, of course, she said the same thing, that you're also awesome. But she had a point, and I wanted to discuss this point, is that, you know, I don't want to, like, totally misquote her or what she was trying to say, but her point is, like, when we're talking about, you know, transgender and biological women, biological men, and that we're talking about fighting for our corners of oppression, and that we live in an oppressive society, and, you know, 99% of us are oppressed. And does what I'm saying to you make any sense at all?
Absolutely. And I think that there are forces in the ruling class that are loving this and have set this up. But and I don't want to be fighting with trans people, but I don't believe in gender, and I feel
right.
as though this is being, you know, we're not allowed to have that discussion. How do we protect the rights of the trans community without destroying the sex-based protections that women have fought so hard for? How do we protect the rights of the trans community without erasing the reality of sex-based oppression?
Well, and she also said she doesn't believe in safe spaces because there's no safe spaces when you live in an empire. We're all vulnerable.
I would say that's somewhat true. I think that I think, though, that this is making spaces even less safe for people. And
right.
I think that, as you know, women have fought really hard for the right to have you know, to request a female in the room when they're having a pelvic exam. Like, that's a law in a lot of states.
Right.
And I don't want that female, legally female person, to be another person with a penis.
Right. Right.
So how do we protect the rights of female people while simultaneously, you know, standing with the trans community? And what the issue I have is that they're really, you know, there's the trans activists, not the, you know, the trans community is not monolithic, but so many of the activists won't allow any dialogue on it and won't, like, I don't believe in gender. I want to get rid of it. I don't identify with my gender that was assigned to me. I'm just a person with, you know, a female body. How can we get along without feeling, you know, like one group is cramming its ideology onto everyone else and no one's allowed to disagree?
Well, and another thing is, too, like, our friend Mickey Z, you know, that's probably the root of all of our activism. The problem is male supremacy.
Absolutely. And male violence is the worst problem in the world. And if we're changing laws that make it look like females are committing more violent acts because we now have a different definition of female, it makes this a lot hard. It makes it a lot harder for us to name that and fight it.
Right. I just have one other comment. You know, you were talking about first wave feminism and fighting for the right to vote. And, you know, we live under capitalism and imperialism. And women, why should we have had to get the crap beat out of us and jailed and all kinds of horrible things happen for us to have the right to vote? But it doesn't seem like when we got the right to vote, it didn't change the system. It changed the women. And so we see people like Hillary Clinton and, you know,
Margaret Thatcher,
politically powerful women who, to me, seem like they are deeply steeped in this system of male supremacy. They're not steeped in it as in opposition, but like fully invested in it.
Well, right. Remember, the first wave feminists were not a monolithic group either, and that women like Emma Goldman and Lucy Perkins talked about that exactly. I mean, Lucy Perkins said, you know, if voting changed anything, they would make it illegal.
Right.
And
these
were women of that same generation. I tend to resonate more with those foremothers than some of the others. So, of course, I appreciate not being denied the right to vote. That's not my primary fight.
Right. Well, we are running out of time, and this really, I was sitting here and listening as an observer and as a listener to this program, and I think it was very fascinating. But Anita, I'm going to pass it back to you to see if you have any further comments or questions for Mary Lou.
Just good luck at the conference and at the Shadow Conference. And I would say I think a lot of these issues could be solved if we could just all sit down and talk. But women are shut down immediately. Females are shut down immediately when they try to discuss this. The conversation is shut down. And I think we really need to cross that bridge, meet in the middle, and sit down and have conversations on how and on why we're divided and how we can come together.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so grateful to be on the show. Thank you so much. And,
well, I just want to ask one question as the host, as a professional podcast host that gets paid nothing. Mary Lou, where can people get more information about this? I know you have a Facebook page, and you know, where my listeners, I always encourage them to look far further into the issue.
Absolutely. People can join the Women's Liberation Front. You can go to womensliberationfront.org. You can look at my Facebook page, Mary Lou Singleton. I have an open Facebook page. We will be putting up the program on there. And, you know, none of us are paid activists, so we have another Facebook page, womencenteredmidwifery.org, and we'll put the program up there and information on that. And just remember, we don't have any money and none of us are tech people. We're home birth midwives. We have Stone Age skills and we're really good at them.
Right. You know, I also want to say that I really appreciate this issue, and I appreciate Mary Lou so much, because I had my children at home under the care of midwives. And, Casey was my first one. I had him in the hospital, and it was such a horrid experience. I went to midwives having my babies at home, and I actually got to deliver my fourth one myself under the supervision of midwives. And there's nothing disordered about giving birth. It's not a medical emergency. It's a natural practice. And, you know, I hate to tell all of you, you know, this medical industrial complex that women can have babies without their intervention. The baby's going to come out no matter how many doctors are there. If there's no doctors at all, that baby's going to come out. And
absolutely.
So I really appreciate it, this issue so much, and I was just appalled when you sent me that letter, you know, with all the different terminology. And so, Nita, you also are a very unhighly paid podcaster. And so where can my listeners access your show?
If anybody looks on Facebook, it's Wise Women Media. I'm also on Twitter that way. And if you want to see the website with all the links to all the archive shows, you can go to wisewomenmediaradio.com and just go into the archives there and you can pull up any show. And I know, Cindy, you've been on my show probably about 5 times.
Yeah.
I can't even count at this point.
You wise women, I really appreciate your time and your energy. And Mary Lou, keep us posted about, you know, your shadow convention.
Thanks so much, Cindy. Thank you, both of you, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the conversation. It was wonderful.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
That's Cindy Sheehan Soapbox for this week. It might not be everybody's cup of tea, but I think it really brings up some very important issues. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Donda Barr, my co-host, Anita Stewart, our guest, Mary Lou Singleton, and I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. Peace out for now.